If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. And right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM, Fight Nation, Channel 156.
Hey, everybody, what's going on? Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is WWE Hall of Famer Bully Ray. On today's episode, Must Listen. It's a very special one. Me and my Hall of Fame tag team partner, Mark Henry, will get you ready for the Super Showdown in Jeddah. It's our very first time hosted Busted Open together. Everybody's been talking about it, and it's the marquee matchup of the show today. The Phenom versus the Icon. Undertaker versus Goldberg for the very first time. Me and Mark are going to break down this huge matchup and share some of our experience working with both of these legends. Check this out. The game Triple H versus Randy Orton. They got a long history together. They got many matches under their belt. But can they deliver to the fans one last time? Plus, Mark and I will talk about what we would do creatively. We got a new segment called If I Had the Pencil, how would we book the WWE? We got all that and much more coming up right now on a special Hall of Fame edition of the Busted Open Podcast. So, WWE Super Showdown in Jeddah today. Are you excited for the show, or are you kind of like, does it feel like a pay-per-view? Does it feel like a Raw? What's the vibe you get from the show today?
You know what? It doesn't feel like a pay-per-view. It feels like a better edition of Raw to me because of what's going on, especially Goldberg and Undertaker. I'm real excited about that. And I'm looking forward to seeing Finn and Andrade. Like, I think that those guys are going to try to steal this. I think they have the potential to put stuff together that both of them have such unbelievable wrestling acumen and things that they can do in the ring that if they put it together correctly, they can steal it.
So Finn and Andrade, definitely from a wrestling point of view, will have a tremendous amount of chemistry. You started off by talking about Goldberg and Taker, and that's the match that's being pushed as the must-see because it's never happened before. You know, they went off the air on SmackDown with Goldberg and Taker in a face-to-face. On paper, it's interesting. On paper, you want to watch it. You have to watch it because you're just saying to yourself, what the hell is going to happen? In actuality, how do you think the match will be? What kind of story do you think they're going to tell? And how long do you think they should go?
Just like wrestling, a match, I'm going to start at the end. I think that how long they should go, 10 minutes. I mean, not bell to bell, 10 minutes including their entrances, which would probably be around 7 minutes of walking to the ring. And then 10 minutes.
So 10 minutes is a sweet spot for you. Basically, yeah. give them your best of, give them the highlight package, get in, get on, get off, and then go home and get it done.
Yeah. And come to the back and reap the benefits of making an appearance, making people ooh and ah and stand up the whole 7 minutes of Goldberg's and Undertaker's entrances. You know, it might be close to 8 minutes. I would say 4 minutes apiece. Because they're going to do the smoke. They're going to do the sparklers. He's going to inhale that toxic smoke and blow it out through his nose. He's going to go down to the ring and have to try to get some oxygen before they lace him up. But he's got 4 minutes to do it because then Taker's entrance comes.
And that lasts about 27. So I can assume that you think Taker would go over in this match, right?
Yes.
All right.
Somehow,
so let me ask
some way.
Okay, let me ask you this. Goldberg looks great. and he's probably, he admittedly has gas left in the tank. If Goldberg were to come back on a part-time basis and they used him sporadically, who do you think should go over in this match?
If Goldberg was coming back and going to work, then you would say, you know, we got to find a way for him to beat The Undertaker.
I would agree. Do you think people would be happy if they don't get a finish in this match?
They are not. If they have a non-finish, people are going to shit on it, regardless of how good the content was.
I agree with you. I agree with you. You've been in the ring with Goldberg, haven't you?
I have. We've wrestled about six times.
And tell me, in those six times, was working with him a good experience for you? Was it a difficult experience? Was it a challenging experience?
No, it wasn't so much challenging to me. The only thing that was challenging to me was sometimes you have things that you're not comfortable with, and that's the first thing that you say when you have a match with somebody. Hey, man, you know how you give that German suplex? That's
you ain't
not
feeling
my
it.
Thing. I'm not feeling that. Like, that's, can we find a way to eliminate that and put something else in there? Like, that's what you're going to get. But the whole point of winning for Goldberg is to establish him if he's going to come back. I enjoyed working with the guy, and I wanted to eliminate him. I didn't have a problem with him giving me a jackhammer. I could take anything. I took a lot of pride in the fact that I was able to take anything and everything, even at 440 pounds. And I didn't want him to move his hand and give the thumbs up, thumbs down, because he did that long before Batista was doing it. And I was like, bro, I want you to have me with both hands. I trust you.
Yep.
With 430 pounds, like, with both hands. You're strong. But if you do this, I'm a spaz out. Like, you know, you could drop me on my head and kill me. And he said, hey, I got you. And the first two matches, he did not take his hands off. The third match, he took his hand off. And I don't know if it was just me. I forgot to remind him not to do that. But it scared me to death, and then he wasn't allowed to jackhammer me no more.
And that was it. That was it. And it only takes that one time.
Yeah. And he didn't drop me on my head. It's just that he broke the circle of trust.
and I totally understand you, because when your guy's our size, I mean, especially if you're 440 at the time, that's a position that you are not used to being in. You're basically putting your entire life in his hands. And to have 440 pounds upside down, you know, everything has to, you know, go right just so something doesn't go wrong. And like you said, it only takes that one little thing to happen to break that trust where you're like, man, something bad could have happened. Can you take me back to the first time that you guys ever worked together, the first time you ever sat down, the every time you first conversed? Who was the leader? Who was the follower? Did he have a lot of good ideas? Did he just let you lead the way? Was he intimidated? Were you intimidated?
As far as intimidation, I was not intimidated, because I was the guy that, you know, long before this Mark Henry Goldberg, there was a Mark Henry and Hugh Morris match where at the Brian Pillman Memorial Show, where Ricky Steamboat came after the match, saw me and Hugh on the floor stretching and talking about the match. And he said, wow, which one of y'all put that together? And I said, I did. And Hugh pointed at me. And he said, wow, it's great to see psychology still exists in our business. And that was from Ricky Steamboat. That was the biggest compliment that I've ever got in my career, because I was included. I was indoctrinated in. I was told, hey, man, like, that's what our business is about. And here we are in 2019, And what's the paramount thing that's said about pro wrestling? The storytelling at AEW and the lack of in the WWE. Same thing. So that took paramount with me and Goldberg. I was confident by then that I could put something together that was going to maximize the minutes on air, and it was going to make him look like $1 million, and I was going to get over. And I didn't care. I knew Goldberg was going to win. When you walk up and see the card, you see Mark Henry Goldberg at the in the main event, you go, yeah, he going over.
Right.
How am I going to make him look good? And how am I going to not look like a piece of hot garbage in the process? So, you know, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And so that being said, I told him he was nervous about he had only been the longest match he had was 5 minutes at that point from bell. I mean, I'm talking about bell to bell, entrances and everything. He was having 1 and 2 minute matches with guys. Go out there, throw a lock up, push off, clothesline ropes, jackhammer. That's his matches. And we wasn't going to do that because I wasn't going out like that. And I told them, they said, hey, man, y'all think y'all could do this in 4 minutes? And I said, no, we got to have a match. And I had to miss some stuff, but Goldberg is one of the first people that I ever wrestled where I wrestled him like we were equal in strength and size. We were equal in size and strength in that match. And this is Mark Henry you're talking to, who knew at that moment that I was stronger than any other human on the planet. So
stronger than any other human on the planet. That is one hell of damn. You're just strong.
I was pretty strong then. And I thought that I might have been as strong as some primates.
Tremendous.
And there was a lot of bears in the woods that if I had a switch, they ass better run.
I had 3 bears at my front door yesterday.
Get
legit.
The hell out
I
here.
Got it on videotape. 3 bears.
Oh,
came
you
got to
post
door.
That. I love bears. You got to post that.
But, all right.
But to the point, like that match with Goldberg, he was my equal, and I made it look like that. And he was like, man, you know, don't blow me up out there. And I was like, bro, do I look like the type of guy that's going to run you? I was like, we're going to go out there and have a good match. This is kind of what I see. You tell me if you want to do it or not.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156, or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
We both have a lot of experience working with the boss. And when I talk about the boss, obviously I mean the Undertaker. Listen, man, when it comes to working with Taker, what is the one thing that sticks out in your mind? What do you know is going to happen in that match? And how comfortable are you just sitting back and letting the boss take control?
That's not going to happen. You can't sit back. It's if you've ever seen a movie or you ever saw a actual episode of one of these fishing shows in the sea, deep fishing shows,
like Deadliest Catch.
Like Deadliest Catch. You see the ships tossing and turning, getting pushed up and turned sideways. And a guy actually died on that show. One of those big casings slid off and hit him and knocked him unconscious, and he drowned. Like, that's what it's like being in a match with Taker. Because he comes across the ring firing. You start the match. If you lock up with him, then it's going to be pushing. Somebody's going to get pushed to the corner, or you're going to turn and turn and turn. And if you do not give it back, he's got to put you out your misery. And he told me to come. I'll stop you if I can. If I can't, then maybe this might be a short match. You're going to get over more than you ever got over in your life. And I had to mentally approach those matches like that. Don't get ate up, because in the first minute of that match, it's going to dictate to the fans who you are as a wrestler.
Yeah, and it's not that he wants to eat you alive. It's that he's forced to eat you alive.
He's forced to.
Because if you don't come at him, you're making him look bad. The dead man should be able to do you off inside of 30 seconds. But if you keep coming at him and making him fight, and I totally agree with you, because that's the same thing that I had to do, or me and Devon had to do, especially when we were working against him and Kane. And you know, I have a lot of great experiences of being in the ring with him. I mean, Mark, one of the biggest lessons I ever learned in the wrestling business was being in the ring with him. One night something went a little wrong, and I hit him in the back with a chair, but the chair kind of rode up a little bit when I swung. So I busted him open. I put 8 staples in the back of his head. Now, busting a guy open when you hit, you know, when you're coming straight over the top, it's one thing. Accidents can happen. This was just, I guess it was stupidity on my part. I mean, I just totally screwed up. So if you're on pay-per-view and you bust open The Undertaker within the first 3 minutes of the match and he's gushing blood, I fully expected when I got back into the locker room that we were going to throw down. And I said, listen, I'm going to have to defend myself. I got to do what I got to do. I got to save face with the locker room. You know, that's what I figured was going to happen.
Or they were going to have your bag packed for you, they're just going to hand it to you at Gorilla and say, hey, man, just go to your car.
Yep, absolutely. But the exact opposite happened, and I earned so much respect for this man when I went into the locker room to tell him, hey, man, my bad. And he said to me, he said, sit down, Bubba. Let me explain to you why that cannot happen. And he, as a gentleman, as a man, he explained to me how I made my mistake, why I made my mistake, and why that mistake could never happen again. He didn't get pissed. He didn't get mad. He didn't, he didn't treat me like a young boy in that moment. So I earned a ton of respect for him. And I always had great experiences with him in the ring. He's a worker. He's not a wrestler. He's a worker. And the word worker in our business, there are few and far between. A guy who can go out there and not know a damn thing and just go by the feel of the crowd. Now, do I think we're going to get Undertaker working tonight against Goldberg? No, I think they're going to have a lot of stuff that they know what they're going to, do and, go out there and give us the best that they got. What about your experiences with him? What experiences stand out in your mind? Do you have one particular match with The Undertaker that really resonates with you?
Yeah, I'm going to put myself over as I did with Dave in Vegas. I was told to come, to bring it. Otherwise, I got to put you out your misery. So I went hard and I picked him up and ran him in the corner and just started going to work. And then he just started fighting me back. And he said, ease up. Let me relax. Let me push you back. And when that moment came, I cut him off because he told me to come. So in my mind, it's, okay, let him get something. And then me cut him off. I cut him off and he said, not now. And he just kept going at me. And then I just instinctively double-legged him, turned him, and ran him into the corner. And I grabbed his wrist and put my hand in his hand to set up the fact that I was going to give him his own thing off the ropes. And he could have said, you know what? I'm going to let him. Let me see what he's going to do. But he didn't. He got it. And he cut me off, and then he grabbed the wrist, and he did it. When I got to the back, he said, that's what I want you to do for the rest of your career. Use your instincts. Your instincts told you at that moment, that's what I would was. That's where I was going next. You read my mind by the action. And that's what made me, from that point on, that's what took me into where I became as a Hall of Fame wrestler. Because everybody I worked with, I tried to make them better. And people might not even realize, why did I like Mark Henry's matches? Because they made sense. And I used my instincts most of the time, because the stuff we called, I was going to forget anyway. But when we got in the ring, everything that you did with me was going to look good, because I knew that I was good, and I wanted to make sure that the guys I worked with came out better than when they went in with me. And that's what the Undertaker did.
Being in the ring with him as much as you have, could you have manhandled him at any time if you really wanted to?
Anytime. Any breath that you take in the ring with me, you was doing what I wanted to do.
So who's the one guy that you've been in the ring with that you weren't sure if you could manhandle or not?
Brock and Big Show. Those were the only two guys physically. Even if I knew that I could do it, they could counter it because of sheer size or sheer talent. I used to do this thing in Louisville called Final Exam Time. Don Fry, Ron Waterman, Bobby Lashley, Randy, shooters, Robbie Dix, all these guys. I was like, come on, I want to see if that karate shit works. Come on, let me go. Let's go. Everybody except for Brock got beat because that karate stuff don't work on me.
If they're close enough to get a karate chop or karate kick on you, that means they're close enough for you to grab them.
So Ron Waterman, Ron Waterman was the exception of rule. He was a big dude too. But the difference between what happened with me and Ron Waterman, I'll tell the story briefly as I can. Ron and I went to the ground. He tried to single leg me, which was the worst thing you could do as a pro wrestler or a shoot fighter to a guy 400 pounds. But at that time, I was a 400-pound dude that could run a mile in under 9 minutes. I was in good condition. And he tried to single leg me because I didn't know no better to lead with my leg because I wasn't a fighter. But I led. He took it. And it wasn't bait. It was a shoot, me stepping forward. So all my weight was going forward as he was going down. And I fell on top of him by the grace of God. And now I'm front faced him. He pulled out and swept my arm, and I landed right on my shoulder. So now he's half guard me. I roll over because I'm stronger than him, and now I put both hands like a push up on the ground, which is a cardinal sin as a fighter. You need to have one hand up on the person that you're fighting. He got me in a choke, and I'm getting that far away feeling like, oh, shit, I'm finna go out.
You're starting to fade.
And what do you do when you get in there? You panic. Yep. Especially guys that don't know how to fight, which I just knew that. I knew how to fight, but I didn't know how to wrestle fight, shoot fight. And I panicked.
And the first thing you need to do is relax.
Oh, brother, I'm talking, it's different with me.
Oh, no.
I stood up with one hand on my throat and his wrist and one hand on his pants. I stood up with him like almost a suplex. I took this hand, my left hand that was on my neck, and I put on his arm, and I was going to throw his ass over the top rope from the ring to the floor.
So you just manhandled him.
Yeah, and he said, let me go, stop. And he had to let me go for me to let him go. And we both went down, and I sat on my butt, and I was breathing like I was finna go out. And he was like, oh, my God. He's like, man, I'm so glad. He's like, nobody's ever did that before. I've never seen anybody pick anybody up. Like, Ron was 260.
That's just cock strong right
close,
there.
Closer probably to 280 when he was in Louisville. Bobby Lashley, got a front face lock and got took out. Ask him about it. But Brock realized from the first time that he tried to put his hand on my head and put his head on my head, that for the first time in his life, nobody backed up. And he ankle picked me. I had never been ankle picked before because nobody taught me that. He put his hand behind my ankle and he put his shoulder in my knee and hyperextended my knee. Brock is the only person that ever shoot fought me and manhandled me. So Goldberg is similar to that. He's a strong, strong guy with a lot of athletic ability. This is a guy that played in the NFL, guys, at a high level with the Atlanta Falcons. He was unbelievable talent. So that is what The Undertaker is in the ring with. He's in the ring with a guy that at 50 plus years old looks like a Greek god.
If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. A lot of people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. You can listen outside the car. Right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Just go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. You can listen on your phone, at home, and online. That's SiriusXM.com/busted. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
Triple H and Randy Orton. Wow. Listen, Hunter took Randy under his wing like what? Yeah. Almost 20 years ago now. Randy was almost like Hunter's protege. And here
we are.
And Batista also, you know, all members of Evolution along with Ric Flair. Here we are in 2019 getting Triple H versus Randy Orton again. Mark, as a fan, are you excited for this match?
I am excited. I think this will be a better version of Hunter and Batista at WrestleMania. Hopefully the match will be under 20 minutes, 15 to 20, and they get it in. And they do that thoroughbred wrestling. And I say thoroughbred wrestling because they can do the drop down leapfrog. They can do the suplex off the top. They can do all the things that you would expect out of a Dolph Ziggler match. That these big guys can do it too. And I'm looking forward to seeing that element in the match.
Producer Alex Metz, is this a regular match? Is there a stip on it? Is it no DQ? Because normally Triple H matches have stips on them.
No, there is no stipulation on this match as of right now.
So they got to keep this in the ring, Mark. And as good as Hunter is, I mean, Randy's a machine. I mean, a machine. Normally, you know, Hunter has, you know, the last man standing, no holds barred, the no DQ. Do you want to see Hunter versus Randy in a wrestling match?
I do. I want to see him wrestle because they're
you
want to
see
at
tackle, drop down, hip toss, arm drag, body slam?
Those two, because it's not going to turn into just that. It's going to be a drop down, leapfrog, hip toss, arm drag into a hole, up out of a hole, and them guys going to go right into a, he's going to kick him in the gut and try to put him in the pedigree. Randy's going to flip him over to his back. He's going to drag him and throw him between the ropes. His feet will be, his Triple H will step down. He'll give Randy a one knee. He'll hit the ropes, give him the clothesline. That's the way they work. I've watched it a million times, and if I was working them, I know their style, and I know what they do, and you work to off the setup of what they do well. And those two guys could do that as good as anybody.
Man,
why not do it?
You should be in Jeddah being the producer for this match. I like what you just booked.
I think, you know what, we're going to talk about it later on in the show.
If we had the pencil.
If the pencil was mine. And I'm looking forward to that segment because I think that if you and I did fantasy booking, people would be like, wow, that was great. We just talked about it on this show, what we would do with the Battle Royal. And just listening to what I just said, if you replay that, you see that that being a structural match, what they just did was about 3.5 minutes of stuff. And see, you don't just call wrestling. You call wrestling by time. So you have to know, oh, how long is that going to take? Where we put that? Oh, and now it's chess. Now you got 20 elements that you put in this match that's 10 minutes. And sometimes you got to say, hey, man, the match before you went too long, we're going to drop y'all 2 minutes. And you start, well, what are we going to take out? And then you, a wrestler, a seasoned wrestler, can go through that entire match in their mental archive and say, clip this segment right here, boom, pull it, throw it, let's splice it, boom, let's go, let's keep it rolling. Everybody can't do that. That's why people like Bubba and myself and Christian and Daniel Bryan, guys that I respect as people that could call a match, Dolph Ziggler, like you man, you love working with them guys because they tell beautiful stories and they add action to it.
Tell beautiful stories. Music to my ears. Let's head out to the nation. Everett in Long Island. Are you looking
forward to
Triple H and Orton? And who do you think's going to win?
Yes, I am. And you know what? What's going on, Mark? I had a little chat with him about Baron Corbin earlier in the week. But
yes.
So... Oh, man, awesome. But as far as Triple H and Orton go, every main marquee match we've seen with them, we've seen the same, mainly the same ending, the pedigree, the 1-2-3. And just like Triple H and Taker in Australia, where I said, you know what, we've always seen Taker come out on top, they're going to tell this different story with Triple H winning, and he did. I think it's going to happen with this. They're going to flip it on us, and we're going to get the RKO 1-2-3. I have Randy Orton pulling out an upset against Triple H. It's going to be an amazing match, a total of 27 world titles between the two of them. It's like the teacher and the student, but this time I have Randy defeating the game in Jeddah tonight. What do you guys think?
Nice, Everett. Thank you very much. Mark, I got to tell you, I want Randy going over tonight. What about you?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You and Everett, I think, are both on the right page. Page 36, as Rip Rogers would say. I don't know. Why do you always say page 36? Anyway, I do see Randy going over. And I think that that's what's good for business, especially if now you have Randy holding over Triple H's head how he beat him.
Is there any reason for Hunter win?
There's no reason for him to. It's better to have him lose and them go into Monday Night Raw or go into SmackDown on Tuesday and have Randy be able to hold over his head this so-called game. Well, the game got played, and I'm still Randy Orton and do the pose. And now you want to see him get beat, and you put Triple H in a spot where it's different territory for him. He never works from behind. He always works ahead.
So you want to see this story continue?
I want to see it continue. I don't want to see it go away because – Triple H is actually somebody that needs to dust them off and go back to work. And that's the only person that really he could do that with is the guys that he worked with. I think Batista is not done. I think as much as they made it seem like that at WrestleMania, I think that the next thing is going to be Randy and Batista both going, hey, let's give him the business. And they'll be able to do that. And it's just tailor-made.
You know, interesting.
Who's going to come to Triple H's aid? Is there
anybody? I thought Dave was done. I mean, and I think they're doing this match tonight as a one-off just because it is Jeddah. I always say it's like a glorified purchased house show, only there's a gazillion dollars involved. A gazillion. You know what's cooler than $1 billion? A gazillion dollars. As a matter of fact, isn't that how much you signed for when you signed your first contract? A gazillion.
Oh, it was a Googler.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156, or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
when we came back on, we were talking about a little something called if we had the pencil, if we were in control, if we were on creative, if we had final say. And as wrestlers, we know that we can come up with better stuff than most creative can. And that's not just me or you talking out of our ass. That's the truth. I've sat in a locker room with the boys, and we come up with better stuff in 5 minutes than creative can come up with in 5 weeks. Because we're in the trenches. Nobody understands the feel of what's going on out there better than us. So, Mark, let me ask you this. And I have a funny feeling we're gonna say the same exact person. But if you were in control right now in the WWE, who would you want to be writing for, and what would you be doing differently?
The number one guy that I'd be writing for would be Braun Strowman. I think that Braun has followed the direction of the office, but not followed the direction of the fan. Becky Lynch, 6 months, 8 months ago, was following the direction of the universe, of the fans, not following the direction of the business, and she got over by accident. And that's what Braun Strowman can do. Second guy that everybody wants to see is Drew McIntyre. Grown-ass man, Drew McIntyre. Exciting, looks the part, can work the part, durable. Why not? Thirdly, now you might be like, man, I don't know. You might be reaching. You might be going a little far with this. It's Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley, I think, can be a main event guy. He's just not getting put in the spot that I think is where he needs to be that character. And just like all the commonality between these three guys is they're all big guys. And I think the business is now finally going toward the intermediate to 260-pound and lower guy. And we got to find a way to get the big boys back in the run because I think the business is trying to structure itself around Kofi Kingston, Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler-sized guys. And putting them against the biggest, most giant guy in the business is trivializing the big guys. So they're just keeping those guys away. But the business has to work back to big guys. And maybe I'm a sizist, and I'm not saying that Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston don't deserve to be in those places. If you've listened to the show over the last 6-8 months and the 2 years that I've, you know, close to 2 years that I've been here, I always talk about how I love Daniel Bryan. So I'm not negating that. I'm just saying that I would put the big guys in power.
With wrestling being as relatable as it's ever been, and when I say relatable, I mean how the fans can relate to the wrestler. Is Braun Strowman relatable to your everyday WWE fan? Is Drew McIntyre relatable? Is Bobby relatable? I think the reason why the Daniel Bryans and the Kevin Owens of the world are so over is because the average fan can look at themselves in the mirror and go, hey, I look like KO. Hey, I look like Daniel Bryan. I could do this too. I like those guys. When they look at Braun and they look at Drew and they look at Bobby, I don't see that. Now, that's not to say that I don't agree with you, especially on Bobby. Because from the minute Bobby came back, I said, give me Bobby versus Brock. That's what I want. Because the story's there. The backstory is there with the NCAA championships and the MMA background. I mean, you're talking about two guys. And listen.
And they don't have the title. They don't have to have the title.
There's no title involved. And Mark, you know this just as well as anybody. Brock is a badass. Bona fide badass. But so is Bobby. but so is Bobby. Bobby he smiles a little bit more, and Bobby just doesn't come off as, you know, as much of a prick as Brock does. So you don't really equate Bobby to the same level of badassery as you do Brock. But you know damn well, Mark, Bobby's a tough bastard.
Yes, he is. And I've not been hit harder by anybody than I told you. We final exam time. Bobby hit me, and I didn't even know he could throw a punch. I had no clue. But I respected his left hand after that.
There you go.
I respected it. And I wasn't going to get hit with it again. I ran from it. So, I mean, like, that dude is, he's a grown man.
So, you know, I mean, Drew looks the part more than any of them. I mean, he has it all. Wow. I mean, they told him to, about 3 years ago, they told Drew, why don't you get out of here for a little while, go make a name for yourself and come back. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, McIntyre is really, really good out there, but it seems like that they don't want to hit the gas pedal with him. I mean, maybe they have plans to hit the gas in the future, but it seems like we've been in the same kind of state with Drew. Braun, really weird situation. At one point, me and Dave were talking about Braun becoming the next champion. Not in a year from now, but we thought it was going to happen at a certain pay-per-view.
A few weeks.
Yeah. Now we got Braun throwing Sami Zayn in dumpsters. Like, I'm not quite sure where they are with him, and I can't put my thumb on it.
Me neither. And I expect more, but we don't get more. And I don't know if it's like, are they waiting for the right opportunity to put him and Brock together, or putting him against Bobby, or like, what is it? I mean, I'm so tired of seeing Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre go beat up Braun. I'm tired of that.
Yeah, it's definitely getting a little old. I agree with you. I got one name for you, Mark, and one name only, and I'm going to make this short.
You said her. I'm in suspense, dang it.
I said one name. I only got one name for you. I didn't say him, her, right. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. Becky Lynch.
Yeah. I knew it.
Becky mother truckin' Lynch. And here's what I would have did. And I've been saying this from day one with Becky. I would have busted out the Stone Cold formula, the Stone Cold recipe. I would have had her follow it all the way up until WrestleMania. I would have had that WrestleMania moment, which you are never going to get again. Let's just say WrestleMania next year goes off the air with a woman holding two championships in the air. It'll never be the first time ever again. No. Becky Lynch has that piece of WrestleMania history. The first woman to ever be a part of an all-women's main event, holding those championships in the air as WrestleMania goes off the air with hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of pyro going off above MetLife Stadium. That moment in time will belong to no other woman but Becky Lynch. And here's what I would have done different.
Uh-oh.
The very next night on Monday Night Raw, the first person you should have saw was Becky Lynch. Now, I don't remember if Becky was the first one we saw or not, but here's what I would have done. Becky comes to the ring. She soaks it in. You got all of those people in Brooklyn going crazy for Becky. And before Becky can even say a word, you hear the glass shatter. And you hit Austin's music.
Play the Austin music.
You got Austin's music?
Yeah. Okay, Austin, go to the ring.
Imagine Becky Lynch standing in the middle of the ring and this music hits. And out comes Steve Austin with the Steve Austin strut. Now you have all of these people, these people going crazy for Becky. Now you got them going crazy for Austin. Now you kill the music. Austin's in the ring, right? Austin calls for a couple of beers. They throw Austin two beers. Austin gives Becky one. Austin opens one. They cheers. Steve Austin says, I just wanted to know what it was like to drink with the man. Boom. Austin and Becky have a beer, and Austin leaves. And that's called the rub.
Rub.
And you can't get any bigger rub than that. And I don't understand why they didn't do that. And I know that there's some people, the younger generation of wrestling fan, who's going to say, well, Becky Lynch didn't need Steve Austin. She doesn't need anybody to get over. Everybody needs somebody.
Thanks for listening. Catch us weekdays on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM. Fight Nation Channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.